Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Kesha and the Creepies is a production of iHeartRadio.
There are people that I know who are Masons who have gone through the initiation process, and I can see the difference in them as they've gone through the different steps, you know, because it's all self-reflection again, you know. It's like what I was talking about earlier with the bathing of the lingam. It's like another way of like recognizing the self. And there's an actual death ritual in their initiation, like a symbolic death that you must go through to become a Master Mason.
Welcome back to Kesha and the Creepies. Today, I am very excited to welcome my next guest. This is Robert Ryan. He's an amazing artist, tattoo artist, and friend. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's great to see you.
What else would you like to add to your job description?
my resume?
Yeah, what's your resume?
I'm a visual artist that happens to have a temple for Lord Shiva in his backyard in New Jersey.
Which you're sitting in right now, I think, right?
I'm sitting in the temple right now. You can see there's the Shiva Lingam is right behind me.
Yeah.
And or next to me. And some of the things that we've talked about before when I was tattooing you and just in friendly conversation had to do with some of the, you know, like the traveling that I'd done spiritually or some of the pilgrimages that I've made. So that's definitely an aspect, but primarily I'm a tattoo artist from New Jersey.
But you're so much more than just a tattoo artist from New Jersey.
Being a tattoo artist from New Jersey is a pretty high. It's pretty high on the evolutionary chain. The things you have to go through to become just that, man. It's like, it's insane.
Well, you're the finest tattoo artist in New Jersey. How have you been holding up during this insane time?
It's actually been the most productive, most beneficial time in my life, which I feel kind of guilty saying, but I don't feel guilty saying it at all. You know, I'm not, the suffering that we're all going through collectively isn't lost on me.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm trying to use it to temper my own awareness in life.
I have not stopped going and going and going for since I was 21 years old. And it just was such a crazy experience. Getting used to not being really, really stressed out every day was so weird. And I'm still adjusting to it. Like waking up and not being in a panic feels really strange.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I feel the same way as you. Like it's not lost on me that this is a horrible time for a lot of people. And there's a lot of loss and a lot of grief. But being able to be with myself for a moment has been beneficial, I think.
Yeah, I think also the sobering factor of like, you know, like we're always kind of trying to dodge the inevitable of death. You know, it's like a tiger that's like waiting in a bush our entire lives. And we know it's there, but we kind of tiptoe around it. And then like to have it kind of like just knowing that like there's a very good chance that you're going to be infected with a disease that could kill you anytime you leave your house. And to put something in a different kind of perspective where the mundane or banal or like trivial can become very extraordinary,
yeah.
You know, or the simple things in life, you can find like a lot more value in things when you're able to see it through that kind of filter.
For me, I'm appreciating every little thing so much more. And also, weirdly, I've had this urge to just get rid of most of the stuff I've accumulated over the past 20 years. And I'm finally opening a box and being like, oh my God, I remember that from when I was 19 years old. I haven't seen it since. Now I'm like selling my stuff on eBay because it's bringing all the people that I would be on tour with. Like they have a little tiny piece of something that's from my history and it's making space for newness.
Yeah, it's like a spring cleaning. And it's also like an audit on all the things that we accumulate through life. Whenever we get a chance to do that, I think it's like it's very surprising. You know, how much things kind of just attach themselves to us.
Well, I love stuff. Like I love stuff. I have like so many pairs of shoes. I have so many couches. I have a lot of cats, but I'm keeping the cats. Like I just, my mom put it in a really funny way. She's like, well, we used to hunt and gather. We're just really good gatherers. I was like, oh yeah, I'm like A+ gatherer.
Yeah, we don't really have to hunt too much anymore. You know, like the meals are prepared for us or we can, you know, like everything's accessible in a market, but we still have that urge to gather.
Oh, I can gather like a motherfucker. So for those of you listening, I've gotten 2 tattoos from Robert. One is on my foot. It's a rainbow and clouds and an eyeball. And he also did the blue tiger crawling up my ribs. And that was the most painful thing in the entire world. But I love both of the tattoos you gave me feel really special. They feel magical. And it's hard to describe because I didn't realize kind of the gravity of how spiritual a tattoo can be. For me, it was just kind of a fun thing I would do if I was having a fun night. I'd get a tattoo. It's more like party scars or fun memories and like getting a stamp on my wrist of like, that was that night that I had so much fun. And then I met you and Brad was telling me all about Dan Higgs. And there's a whole lineage behind what you do and the kind of tattoos you do. They're classic, but they feel spiritual. They look spiritual. Maybe it's because I know you, but they feel like their own genre. Obviously, I'm not a tattoo artist, so I don't know the terminology perfectly, but I feel like you've kind of created your own style.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for saying that. Yeah, but it is part of a lineage of tattooers that in America, we'll go back even further. We'll go back to tattooing in its origin, you know, which I think goes as far back as the oldest remains were, had markings, had tattoos, you know, so the Iceman was one of them, the mummified body that they found. He had like different markings and those were more to represent maybe if he had any kind of ownership of land or perhaps what he did, like if it was had something to do with agriculture or something like that. But it still was symbolism, you know, and I think the intrinsic desire to mark one's body kind of goes back to the very beginnings of mankind. And it's not always in tattooing. You see it, you know, with through like makeup or face painting or piercing, or sometimes they'll put things underneath their skin, you know, in certain tribes or, yeah. You know, like a, you know, a disc in the nose or things like that. And it's just like a decoration of the temple, you know, of the temple being the body. And so I think there were some American tattooers that were able to kind of tap into that same kind of energy without it becoming like too, I don't know, like they weren't trying to be these like modern primitive kind of tattooers where that kind of came a little bit later, but they were still tapping into that like kind of primal raw energy. And the thing that was like kind of struck me about them and how I kind of like fell in love with this lineage and then was eventually like kind of initiated into it were these guys that weren't military tattooers. They weren't like sailors, and they weren't like greasers or hot rod guys, and they weren't like rock and roll guys. You know, they were just like these kind of like almost beat poet kind of philosophical people that started tattooing, you know? So I call them like the poetic tattooers. So yes. Guys like Tom DeVita and Dan Higgs and Nick Bubash and stuff like that.
A philosophical kind of tattoo artist?
Or poetic, where, you know, there's different kind of poetic tattooing and other kind of looks too. But I feel like it's almost like that. I kind of associate it with the beats. And then maybe, you know, before the beats, the Dada,
yeah.
You know, it's using the symbols, but then also abstracting them. So there's some abstractions in it involved as well. And it's just like, it's basically just not coming from these genres that have always been in tattooing, like the sailors and the greasers and the hot rod kind of people, or, you know, there's all different kinds of stuff. But yeah, the people that were maybe looking for tattoos, maybe to kind of more focus on themselves rather than align themselves with a certain kind of occupation or, you know, patriotism or something like that.
Right. Well, because sometimes I would see, the first time I got a tattoo, by the way, was when I was in Cuba and I was walking around. My brother was like, "You can't go to Cuba." And I was like, "Well, now I have to go to Cuba." So I went to Cuba through Mexico, ended up walking around. I was supposed to be studying Spanish. I was not studying. I was studying how to run around and get fucked up and do crazy shit. That's what I was there studying. And this guy was trying to sell a couch. And I was like, I don't need a couch, but do you have anything else cool? And he was like, "Do you want a tattoo?" And I was like, "Sure." So that's what my first tattoo was. I went up into his apartment. He boiled the needle in a pot. He was holding a baby, tattooing me at the same time. And that's my first tattoo. And ever since then, I was like, oh, this is like really special. It also helps jog my memory on my life more so than anything else. Like more so than looking at pictures, I can look at a tattoo and be like, oh, that was that time.
Yeah.
So it's almost like my timeline of my life is on my body.
Yeah, they're amazing mile markers for where you've been and where you're going, you know, and you know, like, I think they're really good to reflect on too.
Yeah. Some of mine suck.
I was going to say mine too. And I never trust anyone that doesn't have a bad tattoo on them, because
True. That's
part of the evolution. And the people that only have good tattoos usually are kind of like more coming at it through a fashionable aspect, which I don't think wrong with, but they might not be trusted.
they're psychos. I can think of one person, and you're totally right. He's a complete psycho, and he only has perfect tattoos. I would have to agree with you.
But all his suits are probably folded perfectly, yes, in his closet, and yeah.
Like, yeah, American, no, American Psycho.
American, yes! Psycho, yeah. He's got the best business card.
It's so true. Well, then I'm really trustworthy, according to that. If you're going by that, then I'm like the most trustworthy, because I have so many like shitty tattoos, because I met actual good tattoo artists only in the past couple years of my life. Before that, it was just like a shit show.
Can we go back to your first tattoo for a second?
Sure.
Because like that experience sounds incredible, you know?
It was.
For one, it's the couches again following you. Like, these couches are like magnets to you. And then the guy was boiling the tattoo needle, and like that was his second, you know, offering to you. Like, I can give you a couch. Oh, you don't want the couch? I could do a tattoo for you. And he has a child. It's like, and not your conventional tattoo first tattoo experience, which I love. You know, I think that's it's magic. You know,
it was magic. It was super magical. And I did.
And you're
like,
in Cuba, illegally.
Yes, Cuba. I used to be so cool. I got an anchor. That one I think holds up. But some of the other ones on my feet, I have like one on the same foot that you tattooed that's just like mush. It turned to mush like immediately. But I'm just going to let it live. What else can you do? You can go over it, I guess.
Yeah. You know, or just move on. Yeah. It's just your body.
It's true. Who cares? It's just going to disintegrate and be turned into probably like a mushroom at some point. So whatever.
If we're lucky.
Yeah, if we're lucky. Because you're in your temple, do you mind talking about, you said Shiva's behind you?
Yeah, yeah. The Shiva Lingam is the main altar in the temple that we worship here. And that's the unmanifested version of Lord Shiva, the god Shiva. And the loose interpretation, or it's actually a pretty precise interpretation in English, is the consciousness of infinite goodness. So the Shiva Lingam, for people that are listening, I'll just describe it more than look at it. It's the shape of an egg, and it contains all the aspects of universal consciousness within it. You know, it's like the egg. It holds any kind of potentiality. Any kind of awareness can be accessed through the consciousness of infinite goodness. And at its base is what's called the yoni. So it's a male-female symbol. You know, so the yoni is the base. And the male would have kind of a phallus shape.
Okay.
A lot of people get really attached to that idea. It's not, it's just one of the, it's, you know, because it's symbolizing all consciousness. It has a male and a female, but it also has nature and consciousness. It also has cosmic and, you know, the terraform, any of the dualities, you know.
What is terraform?
The earth.
Oh, okay.
The earth. So, you know, it's of the earth, but it's also of the cosmos. It's, you know, of the water, and it's also, you know, of the dry land. It's of the day and of the night. It's of the male, it's of the female. It's of, you know, it unites all those kind of concepts, because it represents non-dual bliss. So it's when the male and the female aspects are united, then you have the consciousness of infinite goodness.
That's beautiful. Is it kind of like a yin and yang kind of thing?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's absolutely the same thing as a yin and yang. It's a stone too, I should mention. It's understood that it's one of the oldest things that have been worshipped on the planet. You know, someone just kind of started reflecting on the idea that the stone was consciousness, you know, and from there it kind of developed further.
And that is part of like your religion or your spirituality or just your consciousness? Would you call yourself religious or spiritual?
Yeah, any of those things apply. Honestly, the worship of the lingam is self-inquiry. The worship is actually consists of bathing the lingam in different kinds of pastes and offering flowers to it. And each stage of the worship is a representative aspect of your own spiritual path. And as you go through this process, you start to reflect on your own life in the worship of the stone. So you start to see yourself, you see the consciousness within yourself as the consciousness in the stone.
Well, I don't think my consciousness is there yet. I don't think my consciousness understands. I want to understand, but I don't think so you see yourself in the reflection of a piece of the earth.
You're bathing your own self. I'm saying self, not as the body, as you know, but your own self with a capital S,
right?
You know, your true self, your soul is representative of bathing your soul as you're bathing the stone.
And you bathe the stone every day, right?
Yeah.
Because when we were there, we were talking about it. I remember that stuck out to me, that it's something you take such good care of and you treat with such respect. It's not an animal or a baby, it's a stone, but just the level of respect and time.
And you develop love for it. And as you're doing that, you're training yourself to come out of the autopilot, come out of the heady kind of like judgment of the self and questioning of the self and the doubt of yourself. And you start to love yourself as you love the stone. You know, if you're seeing yourself in it, you're bathing yourself, you're seeing the reflection of your spiritual pursuit in the stone. It's a symbol. You know,
I feel like for me, at least, that's one of the hardest parts of being a person is self-love. Like the way I speak to myself, I would never talk to somebody else as mean and like just impatiently as I talk to myself. It's one of the things I try to work on in therapy, but just like having like compassion for yourself, the way you would have it for a child or an animal or anybody else.
Yeah. So in the philosophy, you know, the same philosophy, which is non-dual Shaivism, is what I'm following, this lineage it explains those feelings that you're having for yourself when you're hard on yourself and when you're doubting yourself and all those things. They assign like they're demons, personal demons, you know, and each one of them have names. And one, you know, there's a name for self-conceit and there's one for self-deprecation as well, you know, and those are two like really heavy aspects that a lot of that we all do to ourselves. You know, either we can be conceited and puffed up and arrogant, or we can be self-deprecating, which is also very egoic. So all these things happen through the mind. So when I'm doing this bathing of the stone, it's trying to get out of the mind and start opening up the heart.
I think you said this. I might be quoting you at you, but so excuse me if I'm quoting.
Are you adding me?
No, there's somebody said it and it may have been you. I'm not even sure, but the true peace and the goal is to come directly from the heart.
I hope I said it because it sounds good, but I don't think I should. but it is. It's a heart opening thing. And these things, like, it's crazy what I'm talking about. I'm talking about bathing a stone every day. It sounds insane. These are things that aren't to be understood through the mind, because the mind is where all the complications come from. You get past the mind and you start to develop the consciousness and then the true self, you know, and then you start to see that in everything, not just yourself. You see it in your lover. You see it in your family. You see it in your coworkers. You see it in every instantaneous interaction that you have in the world. You start to see that consciousness in everything. And that's when I said earlier that the normal and the kind of mundane become extraordinary, you know, extraordinary. Everything becomes charged with this love, you know? So it's, you're building the love up through this discipline of pouring water and milk and flowers over a stone.
I think that's so beautiful. And even just having a conversation with you, I'm not in the same place as you, but I feel how present you're being and how present I'm being. And for anyone who's listening, it's just like being here now is, this is it. Like, this is the gift. This is life. And just taking a second to appreciate it, I guess. So thank you for taking the time to be here. And I just have to, keep reminding myself during this quarantine that, like, this is it. I'm not running towards or from anything. Like, I'm just right here talking to somebody that I think is badass and I respect a lot. And I just had to stop and be present for a second.
Because anything else is total annihilation. You know what I mean? Like, the past is annihilated as soon as it becomes the past, and the future is annihilated because it hasn't happened yet. You know, it's the only place we really can be, or it's the only place we function properly. Because if we dwell in the past or in the future, it sidetracks the whole mission, you know?
It sidetracks the happiness, at least for me. I can always find something I did that was stupid, and I can always be nervous about something I'm going to do. So to be present is almost, this year has been what I'm trying to learn how to be, is just be more present. Because we don't know what's going to happen in the future, and nobody really foresaw this coming. So being present this year and coming from the heart, those are the two lessons I'm working on, and self-love. So I guess there's three.
Yeah. And they're not mutually exclusive. All those things, each one kind of relies on the other.
Yeah. They all go nicely together.
Yeah. It's like a triangle. So, you know, if you have all three of them balanced nicely, then you will. Like a wise man once said, the ultimate goal is peace in the heart. was that the quote that I didn't say?
Yeah, that was your quote, maybe. Or maybe, I don't even know. Maybe I dreamed it. Maybe that's our quote. We made it.
Yeah.
Some wise people said.
Sorry for whoever we plagiarized.
Yeah, whoever, which may have been one of us. So now that I'm done, just being excited and telling everybody how excited I am to talk to you. And you're just one of the more interesting human beings I know, and super open-minded in a career that I, at least growing up, thought was only for tough, hardcore biker bitches. And like, your whole attitude towards it is very different, and it's refreshing because we can get tattoos and like talk spirituality and it's not odd at all. So it was eye-opening to me when we met. It was just a whole different experience. It was really cool.
Thank you. I take that as a huge compliment because you know a lot of people and you have a lot of experiences. So that means a lot to me. And I came up through that, all those modalities in tattooing. Like, I worked for a pretty heavy duty biker and the magic was still always there, even with those weird kind of like interfaces that we would have to go through and like the posturing and all the weird shit. It's still underneath it all. The tattoos were always like just kind of coming through, you know, and we're talking before just how like party tattoos are just like, yeah. I worked in a tourist town, you know, so I was tattooing tourists all the time and they would just kind of come in on autopilot and just like pick stuff out, not even knowing what they were getting. But something deep down, I felt like it was always kind of like, there's some seed there, something deeper that they're looking for. And I don't know what it is and they might not know what it is, but it's happening right now, like in the moment, like you're saying.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, like, and also, especially now there's tattooing on TV, social media is a huge presence on there in a lot of circles and stuff like that, but it's still there even beyond all that stuff too.
What I found interesting is when you were talking about tattooing has been around since, you said, kind of forever.
Yeah, the oldest remains.
So why did the oldest remains have tattooed on them?
Like I said earlier, I think it was just like an inherent need to mark oneself, to adorn oneself.
No, but I mean the physical, like, was it a dot? Was it a circle? Was it an eyeball?
There were some like lines. There were some lines. And I'd read that it was like maybe some property that he might have owned, or maybe like a delineation of where he lived. You know,
oh,
it was like under his knee. It was on a man. But then like you see like not too much later in different parts of the world, there's like way more elaborate stuff, you know, like stuff that kind of looks like the cave paintings in France.
Yeah.
You know, like similar to that kind of look, like the same kind of artwork that was being made on the caves they were making on themselves.
I've been thinking about the power symbols and how there are a lot of tattoos you see on a lot of people and they just are recurring, like eyeballs, and there's a lot of crosses there. In a lot of your tattoos, is it a mandala?
Yeah.
Hearts, daggers, snakes, swords, naked ladies. And I was just kind of wondering if, A, what's your favorite thing to like tattoo on somebody that is just getting like a souvenir tattoo that you know is a very powerful symbol, but maybe they don't even know it, but you know it.
Well, yeah, any of that stuff from the American traditional, the classic American traditional canon of images, I think is really like a useful codex of these. And it's also like a great, because like it was such a like kind of rough and crude approach to doing the work, but people were finally starting to get pictures like kind of shaded and colored on them and stuff like that. So everything's really stripped down to its like really like raw form. So like, you know, like you said, you see like a dagger through a skull. I think a skull might be one of my favorite images.
Yeah.
And a lot of people see that as a negative image, but I don't see it as negative at all. I think it's very positive to be able to reflect on the impermanence of life, you know, and like, you know, you think about Shakespeare had a skull, you know? And like,
yeah, of course.
Yeah. It's just like, it's the existential crisis of mankind, you know?
Yes. I know that very well. I feel like that's one of the main things that drives me to make art and drives most people to do most things is the existential crisis of, like you said, I love that. Like the tiger in the bushes waiting, like it's going to happen.
Yeah.
We're all going to die. It's the only thing we for sure know. And it's terrifying because we don't know what that means. So we scramble around our whole lives trying to like create a legacy or have children or leave a positive impact. Or some people are just like, burn it down. You see that in politics. Just some people are like, well, I'm going to be dead, so I'm just going to get what I need today, right now, what I want, money, power, oil, whatever it is. So I just feel like it's going to be the constant. It's going to be the infinite battle. It's like Star Wars. It's the infinite battle between light and dark. And I think it mostly always comes back to the fact that nobody really wants to die. But like me personally, I don't want to die, but I also don't want to live forever. That sounds exhausting.
No. And then you have to think of like what dies, you know, like does your soul die? I don't think it does. Your body dies. are you your body? I don't think you are, you know, like, I think
that I feel like the outside, I like to think of it like I'm a Christmas tree and all the tattoos are my ornaments.
Yes. Yeah. Or you're the temple, but what happens inside the temple is what's really important. You can adorn it. You can build it however you want. You can make the cathedral as beautiful as you want, but what happens inside the cathedral is what's important. Same with the soul and the body. I think it's just like a husk, and we cast it aside, you know, cause that's where, again, where we're talking about existential crisis is, you know, the body consciousness is a huge problem.
Oh God.
You know, when you start identifying as the body, you're going to run into all kinds of situations, you know?
As a woman in pop music, I know about that. And it is something that I just like, it's exhausting. But then I finally have like gotten to this point where I'm just a Christmas tree now. And I like thinking about myself like that, because this is the housing for my soul. And if you get too caught up in it, then you're focusing on the wrong shit. You're not focusing on the power that's inside the temple.
I think a Christmas tree is an excellent analogy. Keep decorating it and then, you know, keep leaving presents underneath it. And, you know, you're giving to the world and then you put it on the curb come like January 12th.
I know. That's so sad. The Christmas tree death parade is so sad.
But that's basically what we're doing. And then, you know, you take on another one and you decorate it and you make the presents and you have dinner around it. And then that's gone to the curb. And, you know, it keeps happening. What's important is what the tree means, you know?
Yeah. So that's kind of like the stone you were talking about.
Lingam. Shiva Lingam.
Shiva Lingam.
Yeah.
Just in this brief conversation, I feel like I understand the stone more, the Shiva Lingam.
Next time I see you, I'm going to give you a little one.
Oh my gosh. What if it's like a Tamagotchi and I forget to like bathe it? Tamagotchis? Are those like little toys that would beep at you if you forgot to like electronically feed them? I had them in high school and all my Tamagotchis died.
The only thing that happens is that you're not bathing yourself. It's just like not taking a bath yourself.
Oh, well, I don't shower very much.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM. Let's create.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
After a while, you just start smelling like the material world.
Okay. It's so true. I need to actually physically bathe more often. I like sometimes will just be like, it's quarantine. Who am I trying to fool here? Nobody can smell me. And then in the same sentence, I'm like, no, I think I need to take a shower. Okay, when we're done, I'm going to go take a shower. You've inspired me in many ways. But I did want to ask you, there were a couple things we were texting about that I've never heard the stories. And I thought, my listeners come here for all things creepy and unexplainable and just supernatural.
Okay.
And you told me that there was a psychic nun.
Oh, yeah. Psychic nun in Peru.
And I have to know. I don't know anything else about this story. Just for everyone who's listening, I don't know about this. I just know there's a psychic nun.
Okay. So my teacher, my guru, lived in Peru for quite some time. I think he was there for over 10 years. He lived in the jungle. And he was visiting a church one time that was in the city in Lima. And he said this nun came up to him and grabbed him by this hand and said, you're an evangelist. And he was like, I'm not an evangelist. No, I think you have me mistaken for someone else. And she's like, well, you're bringing a lot of people towards God. And he's a guru, you know, he's a Vedic guru. And he's also a shaman, you know, who lived in the jungle and works with the plants. And he brought a lot of people to God through the plants. So she was totally right. So he developed a friendship with this nun. And when I was there, he arranged a meeting with me and her. So he didn't come with me, but I had a translator because my Spanish isn't very good at all. And we met this nun, and it was actually where the church is, the Black Saint Thomas. I don't know if you've seen pictures of him before.
Wait, I'll pull Saint Thomas up.
Well, you have to look up the Black Saint. So anyway, it's where he lived. So she brought me up into his room and stuff, which was really, really powerful place, I could tell.
Where he actually lived?
Where he actually lived, where his bed was. They kind of kept it there.
Wow.
So upon meeting her, immediately she grabbed my hands and she held my hands and she said, you're here, but you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. And I was like, oh my God, it felt horrible. And she's like, no, you know, and the translator is explaining it. So there's a little bit of like delay. So I'm like kind of reflecting what she said. And she's like, no, tell him not to feel bad. I mean that he's not doing what is in his life that he was supposed to do. He was supposed to be a judge or a lawyer. And I was like, no, that doesn't sound right. And I was like, and she's like, what about the police? And I said, oh, my family, a lot of my family members were police. And I was always told that I was going to be a cop when I was a kid, you know?
Yeah.
And I never wanted to be, you know, probably when I was younger, I might've wanted to be, but I didn't become a cop, long story short. So I was like, oh, wow.
I somehow can't see you being a cop.
No. but it's in my family, like on both sides. Both my mother's and my father's fathers were both cops, and my father was a cop. And I have some uncles that were, and then my wife's family, there's cops. So I'm surrounded by these law enforcement.
Oh, so it's in your lineage, kind of.
Well, that's what she said. She grabbed my hands and she said, who in your family was a Mason? And I said, my grandfather. That was someone who I was closest with, was my mom's father. And she said, he was from a high order. She's like, you come from a long line of Templars.
Like Freemason?
The Knights of Templar were, you know, my grandfather was a Freemason, but she said my whole lineage comes from these Templars who were the ones who protected the Pope.
Oh, wow.
You know, and back the old, you know, ancient times. And she was holding my hands and she said, what you do now, you have electric in your hands, which was the tattooing.
And it's the name of your tattoo shop, by the way.
Yeah, Electric Tattoo. Exactly. So this is what, you know, within maybe 2 minutes of meeting her. And then she brought me down to the tomb of St. Rosa, who was also buried in this monastery where I was at. And she said, lay on Rosa's tomb. And she said, do you know the Gayatri Mantra, which is a Vedic mantra? So I had no idea how she knew about it. She's a Peruvian nun in the Catholic faith. And I said, yeah, I know the Gayatri Mantra. She said, lay on Rosa's tomb and chant the Gayatri Mantra.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, 10 minutes now in this monastery, and I'm laying on a saint's tomb on my back, chanting a Vedic Indian mantra in Peru, in Lima, Peru.
Well, that sounds like it could have been transformative. How was it?
It was, these are things that, like, when it's happening in the moment, you're just kind of, like, going through it, and then it's been with me for the rest of my life. I think about it. There's probably on a daily, almost daily basis, you know, how that this had something to do. You know, I'm still not quite sure what part of that path was, you know, and then she was telling me all kinds of other things as well. But like, it was really that moment, there was something was happening, you know, and it, everything started to make sense about like the police. I was always like, why am I come from this cop family? You know, where are all these cops? And, you know, basically that I tried to be the opposite of that.
Oh, and that makes sense. The rebelliousness.
Yeah.
I did that with music. My mom wrote country music and I was like, what's the total opposite? Super dancey pop where I like talk shit on top of it. It was like the opposite of classic old school country music. And now I've like fully come back around and been like, oh, you know what? Waylon Jennings and Johnny Cash, all that's actually the best. It's actually my favorite. And I was just being rebellious. But she is right that you've electricity in your hands. She was right about that.
And I'm not going to become a cop, but
yeah, I was going to ask you, I don't know about the cop part,
but no, but I get it. Like, you know, like the idea, you know, back when you're thinking about the Knights of Templar and the Freemasons and the ancient mystery schools and stuff like that, that's when the law was like morality's law.
Yeah.
It wasn't like busting kids for smoking weed,
right?
You know, or like oppressing people.
It's a different world. I feel like, I don't know, I wasn't there, but I assume it's a completely different world. But I actually don't know that much about the Freemason. Like, I know a little bit about it, but it has a lot of secrecy. Is it a religion? Is it a?
It was a secret order, you know, which they, you know, they consider it to be like a mystery, coming from the mystery schools, the ancient mystery schools of Egypt. And I'm not a Mason personally. I only know of it from what has been kind of passed down through my family, which you're not really supposed to talk about.
Oh, well, you don't have to tell me. I'm just curious. I can Google it.
Well, it has to do with the building of the Great Temple. There's a great architect that is like the master Mason of the craft, and the stages of his, you kind of reflect the stages of his initiation through your own personal initiation, you know, things like that. And, you know, I was super interested in it once I found out. Like, I always knew my granddad was into it. But for me, I thought it was just like spaghetti dinners on the weekends, you know, and fundraising and stuff like that.
That's what I kind of thought it was. I thought it was just like dudes that wanted to get together and like party.
The Rotary Club.
Yeah. Around, like get away from the ladies and get a little drunk with your boyfriends.
That aspect, I'm sure, exists in it. But when there are people that take the degree seriously and they're initiates, you know, and there are people that I know who are Masons who've gone through the initiation process, and I can see the difference in them as they've gone through the different steps, you know, because it's all self-reflection again, you know. It's like what I was talking about earlier with the bathing of the lingam. It's like another way of like recognizing the self, you know, through this process. And there's an actual death ritual in their initiation, like a symbolic death that you must go through to become a Master Mason.
A symbolic death ritual?
Yeah, because the Master Mason that was killed, I'm not going to mention his name because it's an esoteric secret I shouldn't even really talk about. So I'm not from that order, but what I'm going to say is that he was killed, this the Master Mason. So they kind of, you have to go. It's like your death is like an egoic death, so you can take on the initiation to become a higher degree.
So interesting. It's really weird. I did some of my very first recordings ever in a empty Masonic lodge in Santa Monica, like super close to where I'm living now. And I drive by it all the time. And I remember being in there at nighttime and I would just be walking around writing songs in this temple. And I just always was fascinated with it. There were so many very beautiful, interesting looking things and scrolls and wall hangings and all this really beautiful stuff, but I never went deep into what it was.
Do you think it informed your music?
I think that religion and all kinds of symbols in religion, and growing up in the South, which was really religious, and I wanted to be really religious, and everybody that was popular was really religious, but I was really spiritual. And that conflict of, well, you're not a good Catholic or a good Christian if you believe in equal rights or things like that, where there were things I couldn't get past. Like, I believe that loving someone else is beautiful and sacred, and I don't care what your genitalia is. Like, that is something I've known since I was like 3 years old. And so when I would go to church, I would cry. I would get on my knees and like cry and be like, please, like, help me understand what I don't get, because I know love is good. But I want to believe in all of this, and I want to be part of this whole thing that all these popular kids are so into. I want to be part of it so bad, but I know that love is not bad. Doesn't matter what two people are in love. Like, I know it's not wrong. And I just like could not justify, I couldn't get around it in my head. And from there, then I started studying comparative religion, and I went to Columbia over the summer. That's like what I did for fun, is I sat in on college courses in Nashville. And then over the summer, I went to Columbia to study comparative religion, because I was like, maybe there's just something I don't understand. Like, why do like the Baptist church, you can't do certain things, and dinosaur bones are a test of faith, and things like that, where I just was like, I don't understand. So I had to kind of come full circle and study all the religions and spiritualities and temples. And I've traveled all over the world, and I'm so lucky. And I've kind of come to the conclusion that your spirituality comes from yourself, and it's a connection to you and whatever you want to call it. It's really personal and it's really beautiful, and to share it's amazing, but also it's not something I feel like, there's been so much death around religion that it's hard. Like, even the word God, I think I said that earlier. There's so much baggage to the word God.
Highly loaded term.
Yeah. You know? Like, that's what I feel like I have a connection to, but it is a highly loaded term. So I just call it whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. That's why I really like the consciousness of infinite goodness. You know,
I love that.
I think that it's such a beautiful name for God, or a expression of God, I should say. I think that, you know, unfortunately, as time has worn on, we've all kind of confused spirituality with priestcraft, you know, and whenever the priests are telling you what God is to you, you're going to run into a lot of problems. And that's like one of the basis of a lot of the situations that we're seeing in Christianity. You know, when someone's telling you they have the only way, you probably shouldn't believe them.
Everyone has to find their own path with it, and whatever feel like, you know, in your guts when something feels really wrong or something feels really right. And it just always felt really wrong in my like child insides, that like, because someone was gay, they shouldn't be allowed to be in that temple or that church. Like, that to me just never made any sense, and I could never reconcile that. And that kind of grew into being a huge topic of a lot of my music. And I just wanted to make a place that was super inclusive and safe for anyone to come and, yeah, of course, get drunk if you want to, and dance, because that's a high vibration too, and just celebrate the now, like your life, celebrate your life. So it's a little bit like nihilistic, but it's also, I don't know, just taking advantage of being alive and being excited about it. I think that's the thing I miss the most this year, is not being able to throw gigantic celebrations every night and call it a job.
Yeah. I don't think spirituality should ever have been like a dry thing, you know, like it doesn't have to be a desert for people to go to for all their, you know, their ways to go die. And it's also something like, you don't have to go off into a cave, or you don't have to wear orange robe, or you don't have to build a temple in your backyard. You don't have to do any of this stuff. If you're moved to do any of those things, that's fine as well.
Yeah.
But there's a concept of false renunciation. It's in the Bhagavad Gita, and Krishna talks about that. You know, it's like, basically, do you know the Gita at all? Bhagavad Gita?
I don't. Are you Hindu, or are you not identify with any of it particularly?
For all intents and purposes, yes, because that's the lineage that I practice is through India. You know, we refer to it as Sanatana Dharma, which is the eternal duty. You know, this is our duty, is to understand our human birth. Hindu is a term that was kind of, it was for the colonists, you know, that's what the English referred to the Indian people from the Indus Valley. But it's used in India by Indian people. And, you know, it's like, it's not insulting to call someone Hindu at all. People identify as Hindu. But so it's along that lineage. But the Bhagavad Gita is one of the major works that people chant and read and reflect on in the Sanatana Dharma. And it's the story of a warrior who is about to go to war. And the battle consists of families on both sides. And the warrior doesn't want to fight because his teachers and his cousins and uncles are on the other side of the battlefield. And he doesn't see any point in it. And God, Lord Krishna, as God, comes down and says, the battle has already been fought. You have no, you're a warrior. Do your duty and be the best at it, you know? And what he's telling him to do is like, basically, it's basically a message of like, do what you do in your best way. Don't try to be anything else except what you cannot change.
That's the hardest thing in life. I feel like accepting what you can't change and coming to peace with things you can't know the answer to. For instance, earlier today, I was speaking with someone about extraterrestrial life, and she was speaking about how she'd made contact and through meditation, chanting. And now I'm just like, I'm obsessed with that because I want that experience. I want to see it. I want to feel it, because the more I hear about extraterrestrials and people having a connection to God and reincarnation, things like that, it just makes me feel a little more at peace knowing that there's something more to this. Like when I feel that God consciousness, or you said infinite.
The consciousness of infinite goodness.
Oh, that's the name of the painting we got from you.
Yeah, it is.
Holy shit. Well, we got it in the house. We got God in the house. Thanks to you.
So we're talking about what you can't change, you know, accepting what you can't change. But then you are also talking about aliens and UFOs and extraterrestrials, which is great subject to talk about. Yeah.
Or just the things you can't change, and also the things you can't see or touch or feel, and just believing in them, because I know that there's something out there.
Yeah, I think if you want it hard enough, and if you so desire that, it will manifest eventually in your life. You know, you just need to spend some more time with that. I was going through some really heavy sleep paralysis for a long time, and it was happening more and more frequently, and it was really starting to kind of disturb me. And there were a few times where, like, in the paralysis, I was starting to kind of feel like there were beings in the room with me.
Oh, that sounds so scary. See, I want it until I hear that, and then it sounds terrifying.
It was scary because the physical part of it, but I didn't feel it was menacing at all. It was the loss of control of the body was super weird, you know?
Yeah.
And I've heard other people have had experiences where there was like some demonic things happening, like, like a succubus on the chest kind of thing, or like, you know, being held down by a demon. It wasn't that. For me, I felt like I was kind of brought into a different realm. Like the room had changed and I couldn't move and there was nothing I could do about it. And when it would happen, I was getting freaked out less and less, you know, becoming a little bit more familiar with this phenomena that was happening in my life.
So this was like a reoccurring dream?
Yeah. Where it happened like, you know, maybe a month apart. A few times, and it was happening a week apart, and then all of a sudden it was happening every night. So in the moment when it was going down, I was becoming more and more comfortable in this environment of paralysis and with these possible entities in my room. But when I would finally snap out of it and come out of it and come back into the dimension of being in my bed and like sweating, I'd be so freaked out. And I just didn't know how to, like, I couldn't really, if it was happening to me now, I think I would have a better hardware to like kind of deal with it. You know, I think my focus and my attention could probably serve me better, but then I was panicking. I was much younger, and, how the whole thing kind of came to a culmination. I was in the sleep paralysis and I heard a car alarm going off in the background, and, I started focusing on the car alarm. I was like, wow, that's really weird. This car alarm, and I can't move. And then all of a sudden the car alarm is getting louder and louder. I was like, the car alarm is getting closer. Oh. The car is moving closer to me. Why is the alarm coming closer to me? And it was getting so loud that the windows started to shake.
Oh, geez.
And I broke out of the paralysis and I got up and I put on a pair of pants. I put them on backwards. And I went downstairs, I ran downstairs, and roommates actually woke up and followed me outside. And we all got to the front yard and we heard the noise and felt this vibration, and it just trailed off and it was gone. And then I had no sleep paralysis from that point on.
The police of your lineage came and took the demon away.
It could be. Maybe, you know.
The demon police.
The demon police, they come into your dreams.
I wish I had some demon police in my lineage, because I have crazy dreams, like crazy dreams where I'll just be like kicking. I'll be throwing punches. I'm screaming like, fuck you, in the middle of the night. And then I'll have to get woken up and Brad will be like, are you okay? And I'll be like, no, I'm really, really mad at you. I forget, but I'm really mad at you. And they'll be like, you can't be mad at me about dream stuff. And I'm like, well, yes, I can. Don't tell me what to do. That's that happens like once a week in our household.
Well, I think maybe that need that you're having, that feeling that you want to have with these extraterrestrials, maybe that's where you're having those experiences, you know, like, because I think the dreaming, the waking, and the deep sleep state, those three states are all tied together. And we compartmentalize them in a way that doesn't serve us well.
Yeah,
you know, because I think we're getting a lot through our dreams, and we're getting a lot through deep sleep, and we're getting a lot when we're awake. And I don't think it ends just because you lay down, you know. I think that's huge, actually, that you're having these things happen to you, because if there's awareness happening when the mind is turned off, that's really, really beneficial.
It's exhausting when I have nightmares, because I'll like go to sleep and I'll wake up kind of like you were saying, like just like trying to yell and fight my way out of a dream. And then when I wake up, it's like morning time and time to do the day. And I'm like, damn it, I've been like fighting monsters for 8 hours. Now I need to like actually go to sleep and dream about like kittens. What the fuck?
That's the deep sleep. That's when you're undisturbed, you're at peace, you know. But I think, yeah, I think you're sharpening the sword for your daily duties in the dream state, in the dream world.
I feel like the extraterrestrials, I'm like sending them an invite into my brain, and at the same time, I'm scared because it's freaky.
There's nothing to be afraid of.
You think you've like met an extraterrestrial, like for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't scary. You weren't scared?
I think, okay, this might not be a popular belief. I think I've met them in my day-to-day interactions, and they just seemed like they were human, but they weren't. You know what I mean? Like,
mom swears she's part alien, and she's not joking. She's like, I swear to God, there's like in her ancestry, there's some sort of like interbreeding with extraterrestrials. Not joking.
Yeah, like the Anunnaki or something like that. Or, you know, there's like all these kind of other life forms that supposedly bred into our race.
What's Anunnaki?
It's like a different kind of humanoid that are half alien, half human. You know, it's like a tribe of half human, half aliens. I'm not too knowledgeable on this stuff. I just said, you know, in doing some like scant research on UFOs and stuff when I was younger, I heard about the Anunnaki, you know, and they were the ones that would give us the pine cone. You know, I ever see like they're holding like pine, and that would be like representative of the pineal gland in the mind.
Oh my God, I would have never put that together. Okay, so according to my mom, I am just repeating what I've heard. She told me, so there was this guy named Carl, and he's like, I can tell you as an alien that you're a part alien, and try to find out who invented the microchip and the microwave. And those were gifts from extraterrestrials.
Wow. It's like alien intelligence that like the government worked into our daily society or something like that.
And now they're in our phones and follow us around everywhere. But this is according to Carl, who is also according to my mother about Carl. So it's like fourth hand information.
Is Carl referred to as Alien Carl? Like,
no, she calls him Crazy Carl, though. Very close.
Oh, Crazy Carl. E.T. Carl said that microwaves are a gift from the aliens. No, you know, it sounds outrageous and insane, but like, what about our regular existence isn't outrageous and insane? You know, like the fact that you go into a tube, the subterranean, go around the city, then it drops you off, and then you hop on an airplane and fly to a different country. You know, it's like we're living, you know, our existence is not so as normal as we perceive it to be, I don't think.
I don't think so either. I fully get tripped out about even just the radio, like the radio, and then the fact that cell phones and like we're looking at each other and in real time having a conversation, and you are at least what, like 4,000 miles away from me?
Yeah.
Or 3,000. And we in real time are having a conversation face to face. Like, what the fuck? That does not make any sense.
Thanks to Carl.
Carl's also the name of my cat. So maybe Carl is the alien we've always needed.
Through Carl, we know that the batteries and the microwaves, all the stuff has been given to us through alien technology.
No, and I think about it and like, I am not high.
No.
I just sometimes think about technology and I'm like, the fact that I can sit here and look at your face and talk to you and you're so far away is a trip.
I think about a lot that like, there's probably people that are still alive today. It's getting up there in years, but there's people that were alive when there weren't at least as many planes in the sky or any planes at all. You know, like what year was the first commercial flight?
I don't know what year was the first. I'm looking at Brad.
Well, 1903 is like the Wright brothers.
1903 was the Wright brothers.
Okay. So like my grandfather was born in 1919. So like people, maybe not so much anymore, but 30 years ago, there were people that were alive, or 40 years ago that there weren't any planes in the sky.
Then you would just never be able to, what?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead and say it.
Like my grandfather passed away a few years ago and he remembers electricity being put into his barn as a kid.
Do you hear that?
Right. Yeah, totally. Like, so like what we're living in now, you know, it's grown so exponentially so fast. Like it's insane and it continues to go, you know, like I remember I took a break from television for 10 years. And when I turned the TV back on and actually paid attention to it, I could not believe the speed of how everything was hitting you so much faster.
It's crazy.
We're downloading stuff in our own minds in ways that no one has ever had before.
I sometimes have to take a break from like the consumption of media because it makes me feel like my head's going to explode. I'm not sure if that's like a good kind of thing or a bad thing, but I just sometimes have to like leave the phone at home, take a break, like go on a walk, go smell a flower, look at a tree and be like, I'm going to disengage from the information barrage.
It's probably something that we should all do more frequently, but even just to do it like a couple of times in your life, I think is hugely beneficial. I was in the jungle for 10 days one time where I wasn't even allowed to bring a book with me.
Whoa.
You know, so everything that came out of that experience was all output. There was no input. The only input was the jungle that I was in, you know.
Wow.
And it was so intense. It was so powerful. It was like, you know, when people say that I had a life-changing experience, that was a truly life-changing experience for me. It was the first time and probably the only time where there was no input. All the only input was natural, was nature. And that was it.
Well, because in times like I would imagine... I've been in the Peruvian jungle a long time ago and my mom was there. So I'm not like,
that's
cool.
Where I was.
Was your mom with you?
My mom wasn't. I wish, but no, she was not there.
No, my mom was with me. So it was like, I was sneaking out and drinking like a little bit of like, I don't know, some sort of alcohol they made in the middle of the Peruvian jungle and like running around. And, you know, it was like, there's this element of being like a bad young kid. I definitely wasn't on like a spiritual quest quite yet. I would love to revisit as an adult in my mind because I was like 17.
Well, we were talking about extraterrestrials. Like the jungle is a completely different terrestrial experience. You know, like that's, you know, it was opposite of everything I've ever experienced here, you know, and like, and that's happening all over the planet at, you know, as we're living these lives with the cell phones and everything that you said we have to take a break from, you know, and it's like, it's pretty amazing.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM. Let's create.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
That was the point, was that I would be, if I went there now, and especially if I, which I've never done ayahuasca, but apparently it's life-changing, especially if you do it in the Peruvian jungle. From multiple people, I've just heard it's like, it's just really a purge for your brain and body and soul and system of just everything.
Yeah, it's informed a lot of what I practice and a lot of the art that I make and the way I live my life. So I've been working with that plant for 12 years now, 13 years now.
Oh, wow. So, because I've never done it, but kind of let me preface it with, I've heard it lasts for like 3 days, which I am not about to commit to something for 3 days.
It really doesn't. It only lasts for about 7 hours. You're in the afterglow of it for 3 days, which is amazing, and sometimes even 3 months.
Wow.
But the effect of drinking the plant only lasts for about 7 hours, 7 to 10 hours.
Is it like... Did you do it in Peru, in the jungle?
I've done it in the States a lot and in Peru, yes, in the jungle.
And with like a, what'd you call a shaman or a guru?
With a shaman, yeah, with a shaman. Yeah, and that, it's huge. Like, so it's, to me, not only, you know, the plant is a very powerful plant, it contains the knowledge of all the other plants in the jungle. It's like the grandmother plant. It holds the basic, the entire schematic of how everything works in the jungle, but also the ceremony with the shaman is a truly alchemic experience, because what's happening is you're drinking the plant, it's inside of you, the shaman is outside of you singing songs, the plant's reacting to the song inside your body. So almost think of like snake charming, like if there was a snake inside of you and then someone outside of you is playing the flute. That's what's happening with this plant, and the Icaro is what the song is called. So it's this powerful experience where, you know, like it's true alchemy, true magic is happening when the ceremony is conducted in the right manner.
I don't know what about that plant in particular. Maybe it's just because I've been so curious about it, and it's like I've always wanted to try it, and I'm also like terrified of it. And that's also how I feel about acid. It's like I've never done it, really scared of it, highly curious about it, don't know if I need to try it. There are things like that which might completely mind bend my brain, but I also am scared of it because
every single time I've drank it, I've been terrified. That never goes away, you know. It's like skydiving, you know, or like and I mean, and I hate to say that because a lot of people approach it as like an adrenaline rush kind of thing too. You know, I think people want to be like those spiritual bungee jumpers or whatever. But
I don't want to be any kind of bungee jumper. Hell no.
No, not me neither. But there is a level of fear that you kind of have to conquer, you know, and like, you know, because you're kind of like taking yourself out of your body, you know, you're taking yourself out of your mind. You know, when people say you're out of your mind, you know, or like, I got out of my mind on this drug or whatever, you are truly out of your mind. And it's a good thing. It's probably the best thing you could do for yourself is take yourself out of your mind for 8 hours, you know, and to let this plant do its work, because it's got a huge healing aspect to it. It's got a huge teaching aspect to it. And it has a huge revelatory aspect that can like bring you to higher states of consciousness.
You're by far not the first person that's told me that, but
yeah.
So see, when you say out of your mind, I feel like I'm already a little out of my mind. So I'm scared to get any more out of my mind.
I'm trying not to tell you, you might not ever need to do it and it might not ever happen and your life will be great without it as well. But if you ever have the opportunity and you feel called, the nervousness and anticipation and anxiety you might feel, you can conquer it. You've done a lot more scary stuff in your life.
I feel like I used to thrive on anxiety. And now that I've like had a break from it, I'm like, I don't want to feel super anxious all the time. I feel like my life's going to be totally changed after this year.
Anxiety sucks, man. Anxiety is like one of the worst. And like, yeah, if you can get to a place in your life where you're experiencing minimal anxiety, if not any anxiety, Matt, I think you've won.
God, that sounds like heaven. I honestly don't know if I know what that feels like. My goal after I had this like crazy trippy experience where I met the consciousness of infinite goodness, my goal became to vibrate on the level of a neutron, completely neutral, because then there's like the positive and then negative, and then there's the neutral, and you get peace when you're at the neutral. This is what the consciousness of infinite goodness was like. You just got to like bring your levels to be like pure peace.
Total peace.
If that makes any sense.
Do you believe in heaven?
I believe in reincarnation.
Sure.
But I don't know if I believe in heaven.
I don't think you like go to a place and there's like a guy with a, you know, like a doorman with a, you know, St. Peter, is that the guy who checks you in?
Oh my God, that'd be the worst. That'd be the worst, like, childhood trauma, high school shit. If you literally die and they're like, sorry, VIP, you're not on the list. You have to go to the less cool place. Like, story of my life. That would suck. I really hope there's not a heaven. I'd be so pissed.
No, I don't think that's what it is. To me, heaven is a place that you can get to in your life where you have no needs. I think that's heaven.
So I did want to ask you one thing that you texted me about.
Okay.
The UFOs in the Andes Mountains. You'd brought that up in the same text with the psychic nun. And I have to at least ask you what you're talking about.
Oh, okay. Well, I think I should use better grammar. Because
maybe it's my fault. Maybe it's my fault.
The telepathic thing was, I met some sadhus in India, or actually one is a saint, the saint in India. Do you know what a sadhu is?
No, I was going to ask you. I have no idea what a sadhu is. You put that in the text too, and I didn't know.
So there's sadhus in India, and a true meaning of a sadhu is someone who's efficient. Like I was saying just a second ago, these are people that don't have needs, you know, like they eat when people feed them, you know, they just have like a cloth. They don't even have clothes. You know, and if they don't get fed, they just don't eat. They don't need to eat. They, and a lot of them don't talk either. They don't feel the need to have verbal communication. And, but they do communicate telepathically, and I've spent a lot of time with a few of them. One in particularly on a mountain called Mount Arunachala in South India, and he communicates completely telepathically. He doesn't talk to anyone, but he has people that come and sit with him, and he just sits That's all he does. And he's just sitting and sitting and sitting for hours and hours a day. But when you're with him, there's a lot to be learned and a lot to be felt and experienced. And people that are, you know, I definitely got something from being with him, but I was there with my teacher, who was completely on a telepathic communication with him. Like, we went there to see him daily, and he was getting a lot from him. And there was this like play going on between the two of them. And I saw that, you know, because I know him very well. And I saw he would chant to him. He would read scripture to him, and the saint would just sit there and listen and bless us.
Oh my God.
With just his eyes. But yeah.
And not say a word, and not, that's so crazy. I mean, it's not crazy. It sounds actually like the least crazy thing, but it just,
it's actually totally sane. This person is totally at peace. You know, he's just like, he's a stone, you know, but you feel this joy. And he emanates joy. He vibrates joy and love, and also like just a lot to learn by example. You know, it's inspiring to see somebody like, I'm not going to go to a mountain and just sit there and not talk to anyone. That's not my path. But I get a lot from being around someone like that, you know, to be around someone that has no needs and who has elevated themselves, that they can talk to me without even speaking, and they could teach me without even speaking.
Did you feel like you were like receiving anything?
Oh, totally. 100%. I was receiving so much
messages
messages. And just like, it causes like a reflection upon the self. It causes inquiry in the self of like, wow, this person doesn't need anything. And this person is beyond the scope of any kind of tyranny. You know, any kind of psychic tyranny, any kind of obligational tyranny, any kind of law tyranny, any kind of international, national tyranny, government tyranny, you know, family tyranny, you know, like,
wow.
Any of the things that plague us in our daily, you know, struggle, it's not there. So it's just like a clear channel of like truth. You know, and to be able to sit with that and sit near that is like a huge opportunity.
The idea of having zero drama with anything or anyone is a hard concept for me to even like wrap my brain around.
Me too. But I was actually able to see it, you know.
It sounds beautiful. I try to like be less dramatic, but in my world, it's very different than being able to sit and not talk. I don't think I could do that for like an hour. I wake myself up from yelling. I can't even sleep and not talk. Like, I can't keep my damn mouth shut. But maybe that's just not my path this lifetime.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like our what we've done in this life and in prior lives. And I think that kind of determines that, you know, like, We have to have some drama in our lives because, you know, we were drawn towards it.
I think people are naturally drawn towards drama. This is my own hypothesizing happening in my brain, but I think people like having drama so then they don't have to focus on anything inward. But so the drama of like television, politics, friends, high school, whatever's going on, celebrity culture, it just like is a great distraction from having to like look inward.
Yeah. I think, you know, there's huge dopamine hits from all that. What do they call it? Doom scrolling.
Yeah.
When you're like scrolling through like Twitter and stuff.
Oh God.
You know,
especially like, with the election and stuff.
Yeah.
I was so guilty of it.
Me too. I was completely consumed by it. But like, I see what you're getting from doing that is just like tiny, like dirty versions of what you could be getting if you just put it all aside and go inward.
I know, it feels really dirty. That's the exact word I would use to like describe it, is whenever I like am looking through that kind of stuff, I feel like, I hope like no one sees me doing this because I'm not proud of it. Like, it feels icky. I'm like, why are you being like, why are you looking at this shit? It's going to make you feel bad. Ugh. But then I do it. It's the weirdest thing.
I think there's like a dopamine effect, you know, that you get from it, you know. And I've heard like someone recently was explaining it to me that like when you see someone that you think is right, you know, in the midst of all this, you know, like you know, whatever, the prosecutor that's going to take out Trump, or the person, you know, the president that wins, or whatever. When you align yourself with those people, you know, it's like, oh, okay, this person's on my side, you know, and you identify with that. There's like a dopamine effect with that, you know, and that's why we always want to go back to that. Yeah, exactly. There's some merit in there somewhere, you know, maybe that like we're trying to align ourselves with good, you know, and like, it's also like we're in a fucking seriously crazy time on the planet. So I think it's important to kind of pay attention to it in some respects, but we can't let it dictate who we really are.
No, it's really like, it's confusing because sometimes I'll not have any idea what or who someone's talking about. So I'll feel out of touch with some sort of cultural reference. But at the other end, my mom kind of raised us not to, we didn't watch cartoons. We didn't really watch movies. Like I saw Con Air and I saw Face Off for the first time like this year, and it blew my fucking mind. But like everyone else I know is like, yeah, I saw that when I was 10. Where have you been? And my mom just like was like, go outside, write songs, catch fireflies. Don't go on a TV. No. So I don't even like the cartoons I see in really nice pieces of art. And there's like a cartoon. I don't know who the cartoon is. I feel so stupid. But it's also because I was just being present in my life as a child, because that was the way my mom raised me. So it's this weird thing. I don't get a lot of cultural references, though.
You know, what that made me think of, and it's a kind of a weird, obscure reference, but like, do you remember when there was that huge monsoon? There was a huge tidal wave. I think it happened in like early 2000s.
Oh, in Japan?
No, not the Japanese one. There was one right before that. It was like, yeah, I think it happened like in the Fiji Islands.
I do remember what you're talking about.
Yeah. So I remember hearing that like first there was a huge wave and it crashed on the beach and it receded and it brought all these fish onto the beach, and like all these children and even like villagers came out and like went and looked at the fish because they were fish they had never seen before, you know, because they came from deep in the ocean. And then the big wave came and hit them. And I feel like that kind of happens with us when we haven't been exposed to stuff like the age of wonder, you know, like, and curiosity, like how that can definitely bring us to a demise, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I would be there staring at a fish from the deep ocean. I would be right up front and center for that.
Yeah. Or watching Con Air while the, you know, while the, while Rome is burning. You know, like I'll watch so much TV, you know, I'm sitting in the temple right now. I'm going to go inside and I'll watch TV. You know,
that makes me feel good about myself, though. You're sitting in a temple you built that you have made. It's a beautiful piece of art. You're a magical, mystical human. And you're about to go inside and watch TV. And I might go watch Nicolas Cage movie. And like, that's human. It's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a pandemic.
Yeah, and we shouldn't be so hard on ourselves. And like, when you see, I don't know, I'm not about the rules, you know, like all the different rules. I love lineage, and I love teachings, and I love preserving those things, and I like abiding by them, and I like trying to stick to them as close to being prescribed as possible, but you have to do it your own way, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. All right, can I ask you a couple just stupid questions, and then...
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Let's get stupid.
We're about to get stupid here. Would you rather be... Well, this one, I think I know the answer. Okay. Would you rather be abducted by aliens or sleep in a truly haunted house alone for a night?
I'd go for the alien abduction.
See, I think I might too. But I'm also like, no shade to the ghosts, because some ghosts can be friendly. That's in my experience. Okay. What would be like your style of haunting if and when you're a ghost?
Oh, if I were to haunt someone?
Yeah. Like, how would we know it's you?
Oh, okay. Jeez, that's a great question. I would love to be able to play an instrument as a ghost, you know, like if a flute, you know, like if you heard the flute playing, you're like, oh, he's here.
Like Jethro Tull.
I was in a haunted house one time where if you play the piano, the ghost would start kicking around upstairs.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. And it didn't seem like it was happy though. I feel like it was their piano and they didn't want other people playing it.
Oh, fair. Okay, so you can be a ghost that plays the flute. Do you play the flute in real life?
I do, yeah.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. I was about to say it's a little random, but
yeah.
I'll know it's you if I ever hear a flute flying by.
A ghost flute.
A ghost flute. I've thought about mine. I don't know what I would do. I would probably just like scare the shit out of people just for fun, but I don't know.
Wouldn't you sing? Wouldn't you be a singer, like a singing ghost?
No, I sing when I get paid.
You don't need anything if you're a ghost. But yeah, wouldn't you want to make a great ghost song?
Like, maybe. Actually, you know what? That's just me being a jackass. I would actually probably, because I've been singing my whole life since I was a little kid, like to the point where my brother, who's on the call, but he's muted, and my mom would be like, shut up, go outside. If you're going to sing, go outside and go into the bushes so we can't hear you. You're so annoying. And I was like, okay. But that's when I was trying to learn how to yodel. And so I was like doing these like super annoying like yodels. And they're like, go the fuck outside. So I think if I were a ghost, it would be like me like yodeling. I'd be the yodeling ghost. That's me. That's my ghost.
I hope I never encounter a yodeling ghost.
And a flute. We could haunt together. A flute and a yodeler. That sounds like hell.
The worst band ever.
Maybe there is a heaven and hell would be me and you haunting someone together.
Yeah. Yeah, we better never haunt anybody. That would suck.
That sounds really fun, actually. Let's plan on meeting up out there when we're done here.
Okay.
Okay. If you could be haunted by anyone, who would it be?
Oh, you know who it would be? And this is kind of crazy because I really wanted to be haunted by Eugene O'Neill. You know who that is?
No, who's that?
He was a playwright. He wrote The Iceman Cometh. And this is the only reason why I'm not a huge fan of Eugene O'Neill. It's because I lived in a house that Eugene O'Neill bought for his daughter. And I used to think that I would have like an encounter with him. So I've already been like pursuing this ghost of Eugene O'Neill for a while. When I was younger.
I'll say a prayer for him to get you.
Check it out though. His daughter was married to Charlie Chaplin. So I was also wanting the Charlie Chaplin haunting as well. So it was
you wanted an in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wanted to know those dudes, you know. And it's so crazy that my granddad, who is a Freemason, he bought the house from Charlie Chaplin's widow and her daughter. And that was like kind of the house I grew up in. And it felt haunted, but I never had any experiences with with Charlie Chaplin or Eugene O'Neill. As far as I know, neither of them ever stepped foot in those homes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I'll pray for you to get haunted.
Maybe one day I'll get haunted by some non-talking, yeah, Charlie Chaplin, telepathic. Yeah,
that would be a nice, easy haunt. Just no talking. Just like tap dancing.
No yodeling.
No yodeling. God, that'd be a nightmare. Okay, so we've been chatting for like 2 hours. So before you go, do you want to promote whatever you want to promote?
Okay, the best way to find me is probably Instagram. My Instagram handle is RobertRyan323. A book came out today, and it's part of an artist series called Black Dagger. And
cool.
My volume is number 12. And then I have a new book coming out that I've been spending a lot of time on during this quarantine, which is a book of all paintings of deities and how I interface with them and my relation to them and what I know about them.
Beautiful.
And that should be coming out in like, hopefully around April, I hope.
Okay, great. Everybody follow Robert. If you want a tattoo, electric tattoo, that's what it's called, right? Electric
tattoo in Asbury Park, New Jersey, home of the boss.
Home of the boss. and Robert Ryan. Thank you very much. And
so good to see you.
So good to see you too. And stay well, stay COVID free. And we'll see you hopefully soon. Keep on creeping on. Stay creepy, San Diego. Goodbye.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
You wouldn't expect to hear that we're America's third best city for beer like this one. Or home to vibes like this. And this. It might surprise you that we're top 10 for immersive art that's like...
Whoa.
And... Not to mention, we have one of the top zoos in the country. So can a city with the country's best pro soccer team, ranking as a top culinary destination in the world, be in your own backyard? Yes, Columbus. Plan your summer at experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
Hello, I'm Dr. Michael Mosley, and I want to let you know about my new immersive BBC Radio 4 podcast series, Deep Calm. It's all about how to tap into and activate a remarkable system that we all have hardwired inside of us, our relaxation response. And it's been developed to be listened to at any time you want to really unwind. I hope you'll listen wherever you get your BBC podcasts.